WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Stephanie Vaughan's first book is a collection of short stories called Sweet Talk. New York Times book critic Michiko Kakutani says that Vaughan writes stories that are beautifully observed, emotionally vivid pieces of writing. They mark the debut of a wonderful new writer. Most of the stories are about Gemma, a girl growing up on military bases around the country. The first story, Abel Baker Charlie Dog, is about the relationship between Gemma and her father, a career military officer. In this excerpt, the family is having dinner.
"Keep your voice low," my father told me that day as we ate the ruined squash and chicken. "Keep your voice low and you can win any point." We were living in Fort Niagara, a little army post at the juncture of the Niagara River and Lake Ontario. We had been there through the fall and into the winter as my father, who was second in command, waited for his next promotion. "And always speak in sentences," he told me. "You have developed a junior high habit of speaking in fragments. Learn to come to a full stop when you complete an idea. Use semicolons and periods in your speech." My mother put down her fork and knife. Her hands were so thin and light they seemed to pass through the table as she dropped them in her lap. "Zachary, perhaps we could save some of the lecture for dessert," she said.
Was your father like that when you were growing up, in the way he spoke and the way he required you to speak?
Although the character in Abel Baker Charlie Dog is largely an invention, the one part of the story that's borrowed almost shamelessly from my own life are the lectures I received at the dinner table about good grammar and good sentences.
The New York Times book critic Michiko Kakutani reviewed your collection of short stories, Sweet Talk, and she praised you for writing dialogue that maps entire lives, dialogue that reveals the secrets of character and personality. Do you think that in spite of your father's lectures that you were really attuned when you were young to listening to how people spoke?
Probably. I think all of us who grew up in the Army were especially attuned to that because whenever we moved to a new region, especially in the United States, we were hearing English spoken with a different accent, and we almost inevitably acquired that accent quickly in order to fit in. When I lived in Oklahoma, I think I spoke like a person from Oklahoma, and upstate New York like a person from upstate New York. So I was, in one way or another, listening all along.
Now, you grew up on Army bases, and you say you had to, like, learn to speak differently no matter, you know, depending on which area you were in. What else did you have to do to keep fitting into the different cultures that you moved into? And I should say, you lived in Ohio, New York, Texas, the Philippines, Italy. These are pretty different places.
Well, the clothing was always different, and dance steps were always different. Everything was always different. There was always a child culture or a teen culture already in place when we moved in. And in the instances, especially when we lived in civilian neighborhoods, we used to, all of us, try to remodel ourselves overnight by changing our clothes or practicing in front of a mirror dance steps that we would probably never do in public but would try to learn so that we could do in public, that sort of thing that I think probably all kids do, whether they're in the Army or not.
Did you find Army bases were the same all over, though, inside the base?
In a way, they are. They always have a teen club. They always have a snack bar, a PX, a commissary. The United States, especially when it builds its bases overseas, often does as much as it can to conceal from you that you are no longer living in the United States.
What were the teen clubs like on the bases?
They always had a ping pong table and, and, you know, a not very good sound system, and they had often decorations that no teenager would have painted or wanted to look at, but they had been done by a GI who had been assigned to make teen decorations. I think the teen club that we went to in Italy at Camp Darby, I think, had pictures of elephants on the walls. Maybe the guy who painted it was good with elephants.
Were these always chaperoned, these clubs?
Yes, there was always a sergeant whose job it was to open the teen club for the teenagers and watch us dance and play ping pong and then close it up for us after we left.
In one of your stories, you have a description of an ice storm that just paralyzes the whole area. The whole area is one sheet of ice, except on the army post where you live, which was cleaned up immediately. And you're right, whenever I think of an army post, I think of a place the weather cannot touch for long. Was that a good feeling to have things so under control, or did you yearn for the chaos of the outside world?
Well, it was nice to have the streets cleaned up during an ice storm so you could walk down them, but it is true that it was astounding and bewildering and puzzling in a way. The order of the of an army post or any military base in some ways doesn't prepare you for the disorder of the world beyond it.
What did your father do in the military?
I have no idea what he did. I don't know what anyone's father ever did in the military. Their work was always a secret. They told us they couldn't tell us anything about it, and they never did. We were living in Italy when the Berlin Wall went up. A jeep arrived at our house at 3 o'clock in the morning to pick up my father, who left with a gun on his hip. The next time we saw him a week later, he was carrying an M14 rifle into the officers' club and checking it at a gun rack that had suddenly appeared. We learned about the Berlin Wall, though, not from my father, but from the newspapers.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a brother?
I have a brother, and I have a sister.
Did your brother join the military?
Both my brother and my sister joined the military. My brother is a Vietnam veteran, and my sister, who almost made a career of the Army, decided not to, was part of the United Nations multinational force observing the Israeli withdrawal from Egypt.
Now, are you older or younger than
I'm the oldest.
Was there pressure on you to go into the military, too?
No pressure on any of us. I think we were raised so that had any of us chosen the military, we might be somewhat comfortable there, but I didn't choose it.
How did you start writing?
I can't remember a day when I started writing, but I think I started writing when I was writing letters. I started to write very long letters that I would tell stories in. In order to make my life interesting, I found myself embellishing, and then I found myself lying. And I thought I had inadvertently stumbled into fiction, so I tried to do it more formally.
Who are you writing letters to?
Friends, peers.
These were letters you had to write because you were always moving and leaving your friends behind?
Yes. I mean, I didn't write when I was in high school or even in college, but after college when I wrote to friends who were in other towns.
I see.
I used to write long letters, and so did they. And they always seemed to have very interesting lives, and I always seemed to have a very quiet life, so I would try to make it more interesting by making up details.
Well, before you realized that lying could become an art, were you at all disturbed to see these fabrications that you were sending off to your friends?
They were usually small and harmless, I thought, and they were usually ways of taking something trivial that had happened to me and adding details to it. Rather, I don't think I did any harm to anyone, and so I wasn't deeply alarmed.
Mm-hmm. When you started to write fiction, did you immediately turn to aspects of your childhood growing up on a military base?
Actually, the first story I ever wrote, and you'll understand why it was not published, was about a 19th century dwarf.
why did you write about that?
He was Italian, and I had lived in Italy and was trying to do an Italian story. But really, I have no idea. I think I thought I had to invent a bizarre character in order to write fiction. And so I used to write about people I had nothing in common with and knew nothing about. But it took me a while to realize that there's material. Wherever you happen to be having lunch, you can find material.
Is there a novel in the works now?
There is.
And what new challenges is that posing for you?
Well, it's interesting to work on a novel. I don't think the novel form is quite so passionate as and intense as the short story form, but because it has a bigger canvas, it allows for more complexity and diversity, and it allows you to be very digressive and leisurely at times.
In what way do you think the short story is a more passionate and intense form than the novel?
Well, you have to do a lot of things very quickly. You have to do a lot of things in the short story that you also have to do in the novel. You've got to get characters introduced, and you have to get them moving. They have to do something. You have to get them out of there. You have to bail them out. But you have to do it in a very, very short space. And you have to tonally, I think, sustain an effect over 15 or 20 or 25 or 30, 35 pages. To write a short story. In a novel, you can often have many voices and interchange among voices and so on. So there's a kind of single purpose in a short story and a single voice in a short story that I think gives it its passion.
Are you committed now to living what you think of as an interesting life, or do you just like live your life and not think about that?
Well, I hope my life won't be boring from here on out, but I'm not committed to seeking experiences in order to write about them. I think I'll either invent them or they'll come to me.
Well, Stephanie Vaughn, thank you very much for talking with
us. Thank you very much.
Stephanie Vaughn's first collection of short stories, Sweet Talk, is published by Random House.